Let's get down to business, taking a look at Wall Street. Dow Jones Industrial Average down 27, closing at 25,338. S&P 500 down 6 at 2,737. NASDAQ Composite down 18 at 7,273. Russell 2000 Small and Mid Caps down 5 at 1525. Yield on the 10-year Treasury note down 1 basis point at 3.04%. Oil up $1.12 at $51.41 per barrel. Gold up $3.40 at $12.25.10 per ounce. Stocks mostly lower today. The Dow and the S&P moved into positive territory with about an hour of trading, but then rolled over in the final 10 minutes. On Tuesday, you'll recall Federal Reserve Vice Chair Richard Clarida delivered a speech. He sounded dovish. Yesterday, Fed Chairman Jay Powell delivered his own dovish panegyric of Fed propriety. Today, the Fed published the minutes from the most recent FOMC policy meeting, and the main headline from the minutes is that almost all Fed officials saw another rate hike warranted fairly soon. Now, the Fed discussed modifying language on further gradual hikes while expressing its greater reliance on incoming data. Specifically, the minutes state, many participants indicated that it might be appropriate at some upcoming meetings to begin to transition to statement language that placed greater emphasis on the evaluation of incoming data in assessing the economic and policy outlook. Such a change would help to convey the committee's flexible approach in responding to changing economic circumstances. The minutes reveal the Fed is very aware of recent market volatility, saying in their discussion of financial developments, participants observed that financial conditions tightened over the intermeeting period as equity prices declined, longer-term yields and borrowing costs for most sectors increased, and the foreign exchange value of the dollar rose. Despite these developments, a number of participants judged that financial conditions remained accommodative relative to historical norms. The bottom line from the Fed minutes, monetary policy was not on a preset course. If incoming information prompted meaningful reassessments of the economic outlook and attendant risk, either to the upside or the downside, the Fed is willing to let their policy outlook change. Special Counsel Robert Mueller has obtained a guilty plea and an agreement to cooperate from Michael Cohen, Trump's former attorney and fixer. Cohen was intimately involved for years in the Trump Organization business, making deals, putting out fires. If he's telling Mueller everything he knows, Trump could be in serious trouble. Cohen is now admitting that he lied to Congress about some key matters involving his former boss. In a 9-page filing, prosecutors laid out a litany of lies that Cohen admitted he told to congressional lawmakers about the Moscow Project, an attempt, Cohen said, to minimize links between the proposed development and Trump as his presidential bid was taking off. Cohen falsely said efforts to build a Trump-branded tower in Moscow ended in January 2016, when in fact discussions continued through that year. Among the people Cohen briefed on the status of the project was Trump himself on more than 3 occasions. The upshot is that Trump had deeper financial interest in Russia while running for president than he has acknowledged up till now. In the document filed today with Cohen's guilty plea, the Mueller team explains that while Cohen testified and said publicly that the Moscow project was abandoned before the Iowa caucus in early 2016, that was, in fact, false. Cohen pleaded guilty to a slew of federal crimes in a separate case in the Southern District of New York in August, implicating Trump in a non-disclosure payment scheme in some fairly dramatic court testimony. Since then, he pleaded guilty in New York. There have been numerous reports that Cohen has been voluntarily cooperating with Mueller and interviewing with investigators on numerous occasions. That's not the only part of the investigation that's heating up, though. A draft plea suggests that Roger Stone, a Trump confidant who regularly communicated with the campaign, had conspiracy theorist Jerome Corsi reach out to WikiLeaks, the Russia cutout that released the hacked emails. It appears Corsi contacted WikiLeaks about the stolen emails and then passed Stone advanced information about the emails, information Stone could then pass to the Trump campaign. The emails between Corsi and Stone show they knew WikiLeaks possessed information that would be damaging to then-candidate Hillary Clinton and that WikiLeaks planned to release damaging information in October 2016. In short, the case for collusion, at least in part, posits that Russia hacked the emails, gave them to WikiLeaks to release at an advantageous time, and that Corsi got information on how WikiLeaks planned to use the emails and passed it to Stone, who he knew was in regular contact with the Trump campaign. Now, earlier this week, the deal between the special counsel and former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort broke down dramatically as Mueller accused Manafort of repeatedly lying to his team and FBI investigators in breach of his cooperation agreement, while at the same time providing information to Trump's team of defense attorneys. And last week, Trump submitted written answers to Mueller in response to questions about collusion between his campaign and Moscow. It's possible that Cohen's cooperation with Mueller will impact his sentence in the separate case in New York. Cohen's scheduled to be sentenced for his other crimes on December 12th. Argentina hosts the G20 summit this weekend. G20 member nations were still struggling to reach agreement on major issues including trade, migration, climate change, as the world leaders began arriving in Buenos Aires ahead of a summit starting on Friday. Trump canceled a planned meeting with Russian President Putin, but a meeting with the Chinese President Xi Jinping still on. Putin reportedly has scheduled a meeting with Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. The meeting between the two leaders is happening at a critical time for both Russia and the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. They're struggling to defend their share of the global oil market from producers in the Texas oil patch. Meanwhile, falling oil prices, Brent crude futures for delivery next month traded below $60 a barrel yesterday, and West Texas Intermediate trading in the low 50s today. It's putting pressure on the budgets of both Russia and Saudi Arabia. Though Putin has repeatedly brushed off these concerns, saying yesterday that Russia's fine with oil prices at $60 a barrel. Not long after, he said something similar about oil at $70 a barrel. Even though Mohammed bin Salman could risk arrest on war crime charges as soon as he steps off his plane, the Khashoggi scandal and the international backlash against what's seen as MBS's heavy-handed rule won't factor into discussions between the two leaders. Russia may reduce oil output along with OPEC, which would help to alleviate some of the price-suppressing global supply glut. The EIA reported yesterday that U.S. stockpiles rose by 3.6 million barrels in the week ending November 23rd, exceeding expectations, marking the 10th consecutive week of inventory increases. Gasoline that costs less than $2 a gallon can now be purchased at least one gas station in 20 U.S. states. You can thank the bear market in crude oil for that fact. The U.S. and China have been engaged in a trade war since July, with tariffs and takedowns flying back and forth with an increasing intensity. The consequences stretch well beyond the economies of the two global superpowers. Countries in the Asia-Pacific area are among those directly hit by U.S. steel tariffs, and perhaps more importantly, indirectly via tariffs imposed on Chinese goods that so many Asia-Pacific regional supply chains feed into. Pouring oil on the fires ahead of this week's critical meeting between Trump and Xi, China's Ministry of Finance and Commerce called on the U.S. to put a stop to its destructive policies. Trump earlier this week pledged to raise tariff rates on hundreds of billions of dollars in Chinese imports as early as January. Even the most staunch U.S. security allies, like Australia, have spent years effectively staking out a position on trade that now stands at polar opposites with the U.S.'s position. The potential for relations to fall apart sometime over the weekend are higher when the two sides choose to trade barbs rather than goods. Instead of concentrating on finding a trade breakthrough, the opposing administrations are intensifying hostilities in the lead-up to the summit. Volvo executives told reporters at the Los Angeles Auto Show today that Volvo is slowing the pace at which production is being ramped up in their factory in Charleston, South Carolina. The change will also slow down hiring. Volvo is scaling back plans for its new assembly plant just outside Charleston as a result of the trade war triggered by Trump. The $1.1 billion factory opened earlier this year. It was expected to earmark about half of its capacity for export markets, including China. But the Chinese market for American-made vehicles has largely dried up as a result of tariffs the Chinese have enacted in response to Trump's import tariffs. Volvo confirmed plans to shelve an initial public offering potentially worth $30 billion. Volvo previously blamed Trump's trade wars for postponing the share sale. Personal income rose 0.5% in October, and personal spending edged higher as well, rising 0.6% for the month. The core Personal Consumption Expenditures Index, PCE, the Fed's preferred gauge of inflation, rose at a rate of 1.8% over the past year. Core PCE excludes volatile food and energy prices. Over the last month, core PCE rose 0.1%. Dow Jones Industrial Average today down 27 at 25,338. S&P 500 down 6 at 2,737, and the NASDAQ Composite down 18 to finish at 7,273. As always, follow along at moneyradio.com, live streaming and archived audio. Our daily blog, eatthebankers.com.